Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So our assignment from yesterday, the self-hating message is that as we are, we're not enough. Enough for what? What does that mean? If you were enough, then what? Record and listen. Okay, here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
I just lost the caller. Hang on, let me, if they come back again, I'll bring them on.
Okay. But,
here we go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Ashwini. This is Jan in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jan.
Hey.
What are you seeing?
lots of stuff. man, this one is so huge. Like, everyone is, I mean, I guess they all are, right? And I loved so many.
No.
Oh, yeah, good.
I think for most people. And you know, Jen, I suppose if we were as able to talk about it as we're able to talk about something like self-care, it wouldn't be that big a deal. But it's not something that people are free to talk about. And so, yeah, I think it's huge.
Yeah, yes, and that's, yes, thank you for that, because, yeah, it is so, like, something, right, that's not talked about, and I get that's, I felt such gratitude, like, that we have a practice that we can talk about this, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
amazing, that, you know, so that's such a huge gift, and, gosh, there's so much, like, one, this happened with the money to some degree, and then it really ramped up with the sexuality that I'll notice, like, I'm struggling, like, not being allowed, I guess would be the language we say sometimes, like, to listen to these calls. Like, I notice, you know, I'm on the call, but I'm checking my email, or I'm, you know, like, I'm totally just, but,
uh-huh.
I mean, I saw that. So, you know, so now I've been going back through and listening to the recordings again, like, even though I probably could listen to those recordings, you know, a lot, because each time it's like, oh, well, like, I didn't hear that. So I just
mm-hmm.
like trying to even like pull me out of the, you know, out of being able to even hear it and participate, I think has been going on. But again, I'm going back and staying, you know, as plugged in. I know that I want the freedom, right? Like, with everything. So I want to
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
listen and to show up and all of it. So, so yeah. And the vulnerability and the authenticity too, with which people have shared, you know, people have commented on that, and it's just been so moving to me too. I just so appreciate that. And I guess, you know, I don't want to go into stories. I would just say, like, yeah, I'm in that camp too of, you know, I think especially women, but, you know, whatever, all of us, you know, the you know, traumas and abuses and whatever we would talk about being part of the kind of journey of this human. And I feel like practice has helped me so much to not live, like, defined by that and to have a lot of freedom around, you know, where I initially was when I came to practice. A lot of that content was a lot of the stuff that I was really struggling with, and I feel so much freer with it now. And yet I see that, like, in the straight up just sexuality content, like, I'm still there's still challenge. So for me, there was, you know, there was a person in my family that was arrested, and I was questioned in a court about all these sexual things when I was little, and there were child protective service people in my home, and, you know, that's all the, so I'm trying, so there's, like, that. And then here's this person today who has a beautiful partner and is married and wants to enjoy, like, I have these glimpses that sexuality has and sensuality and everything has that potential to be this beautiful expression of life, but it gets all,
mm-hmm.
you know, glommed in with all that other weird stuff. And so it's just kind of a,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's
well,
a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so two things about it, Jen, that, I just, again, want to underline. One is the distraction, right? That,
yeah.
that on the one hand, we're we're meant to believe, to buy the idea that whatever goes on with us is basically our fault. And then when we get into a situation like this and we watch that system that controls us attempt to distract us so that we're not in a position to be able to get any clarity, which will lead to freedom, it takes it can take a lot of the fault and blame out of it, because it we see what a setup it is. Okay, so you know, you've got all this stuff going on. If you could get through that, then you would be okay. Oh, by the way, we're not going to let you get through that because we have no interest in you being okay. So that one piece of it. And then using the tools of practice, there's the opportunity to reach that child and that child who went through those traumas, as well as everybody else who was associated, right? We talked about this a little bit. Oh, I guess it was on open air, about the number of aspects of the personality who the cluster that can exist in a situation like that. So there's the fear, there's probably shame. You know, if I were different, if I were better, this wouldn't be happening. There's worry about one's survival. There's also a desire to please, a desire to fit in and to get that love and acceptance no matter what's going on. So then here, X number of years later, you find yourself in a really loving relationship, but all those folks came with you.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
So the grown up woman knows what's possible in an intimate relationship, but all these younger folks, and again, whatever happened as you went into puberty and then young, you know, all of that morphing that goes on as the survival system adapts to new circumstances. So now there's the opportunity for you to drop all of the stuff about it and know that this is the opportunity to help these folks out of suffering.
Yeah, and so I guess that's what it looks like. There was a conversation about that maybe like a week ago about the kind of, so keeping all of those folks in conscious awareness and finding out what's going on for them, how can we assist them? Like, that's kind of what it looks like, right? I mean, I guess I know this in some way, but I'm like, what does it look like again? What are we?
Exactly. You know, yeah. Exactly. And, right. You know, Jen, Ram Dass did this really brilliant thing. The content was hospice, but the process is exactly the same. And what he taught people to do is, so if it's grieving, right, that they were doing, grieve for a particular period of time. And during that particular period of time, you're there. You're completely open to everything that everybody has going on. But it's during that time. It's not what ego will do to us, which is to bring everything in at exactly the wrong time. So ego would have you have no awareness of any of this stuff all the time until you're in an intimate situation with your partner. Then it's going to bring all of this to the fore. So we actually have the ability to make those choices. You know, I'll deal with all, it's date night, you know, so at 5 o'clock, we're going to sit down and we're going to just talk with everybody who's got anything going on, right? And then you folks are going to, take care of yourselves here for a little while, and I'll be back to check in. But you do not have to, we do not have to be, what's the word? We don't have to be subjected to ego's version of what trauma requires 24 hours a day.
Yeah, that's so, so helpful. Yeah, yep, because I think that's been some of the fears, almost like, you know, Yeah, I just don't want to go back to that. That's kind of how it was before practice. It was like living in that place of trauma, and I don't want that at all. And yet I do want you know, the healing and the support for those aspects and all that. I know we're out of the time here, but yes. So thank you. That is a great
and you have all the tools. You have all the tools now.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
It's just practicing
Thank you.
They won't want you to listen to this one, Jen. Listen to it, okay?
I'm sure. I've got a little list, and I'm tracking, so I'll make sure that this is on the list, and I listen back to it, yeah, for sure.
All right.
And thank you, Jen. This is part of our practice to talk about it. It's just so awesome that we, you know, everything it can be brought into practice. However we. Yeah, thank you.
Everything. All right. Thanks, Jen. Go happy.
Thanks, Jen. I love the fact that practice offers us the choice, Sherry, where before practice, we don't have any control over any valves of conditioned thinking, right? That it just floods in at the most inappropriate situations. And to know, when you were talking to Jen, the thing that dropped in is some recent research we were looking at how much not that psychological trauma affects us physically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the domain of sexuality, and that that there's the assumption that you just carry on as before, but how much you're changed by the trauma is not something that is ever acknowledged.
Yes. Yeah.
And that you carry it with you. And so what practice allows us to do is to face and heal all of those things, so that we can be completely present, as opposed to having the baggage show up in inconvenient places, but to acknowledge that it happened and there has been a change in complete acceptance and compassion, rather than the repression that ego, that is ego's reaction to it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And all of it, when we look at it from a practice perspective, every bit of it gives us an opportunity to choose the unconditional, right? Whatever happened to anybody, we get to choose the unconditional. That's what we're learning to do. But your point is huge, that we're going along, something traumatic happens, and we literally become a different person. And as you say, that's not acknowledged, and certainly the magnitude of that is not acknowledged. But now we can acknowledge it and embrace it.
Yes, yes. And what I was saying when you said that is the way that ego acknowledges it is there's something wrong. So it's not an acknowledgement; it's a denial.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. It denies the person's experience and shuts it out. And I think what we do in practice is accept the person's experience for what it was, whatever it was, not condemn it as wrong and to be repressed or to be fixed or dealt with, but bringing it into the light of conscious awareness allows for an acceptance and a transcendence rather than a maintenance.
Yes, a survival, which is what ego wants. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Helga from Charleston.
Hello, Helga.
Hi.
What are you seeing?
Well, this is. It's a very, very, I mean, it's such a rich subject, obviously, for everybody. And, you know, I was thinking about it, and, you know, in some ways I feel, you know, where the question was, you know, what, I can't remember exactly, but something about not being enough. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when I grew up, I felt it wasn't about not enough. It felt like I was too much. And, you know, I come from a background of sexual abuse, as you know. And I think, you know, when I was little, I took that upon myself, and I felt like, you know, I was probably too sensuous, too this and that and the other thing. And also, I got this message when I was a teenager and I fell in love for the very first time, and I was, you know, in some corner kissing with this boy that I loved so much. I was called a whore in German. And So for me, you know, this the solution, I mean, when I think about that now, it's just amazing. The solution that ego came up with was I worked in the sex industry for a while, you know, because I had a lot of sexual energy. I really, really, really enjoyed it. So that must have meant I was a whore. So, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, that, you know, that, and then that, and the cost
that
of
that. That is so intense, isn't it? To think of the level of pathetic.
But there's such a logic, you know, there's such a logic to that, you know, on that level. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me that I would be drawn to that. And
yes.
Hang on, you're going a little underwater. What I wanted to respond to about it is just to highlight what ego does to conditioned people, right? So there was nobody in your world to explain to you that what was going on with you was perfectly normal.
And beautiful, and how to be
with that, right? Instead, to call you names that would send you off in a direction that could be dangerous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat. Yep. Yeah. So. Anyway, I don't know what to say. I can't remember what I was going to say, but, you know, I just really started to look at that whole thing and, you know, how that saved my life and informed my choices. You know, what I wanted to say was obviously that kind of career choice, I had so much guilt and shame and secrecy around it, and doesn't do anything for intimate relationships. That's for sure. So
right. If you were a whore for kissing a boy that you were in love with, good grief! What language are people going to come up with to call you when that's what? Right.
I mean, well. The words had already all been used up for. So.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And yet they still hurt.
Yeah,
and they're still so not true.
Yeah, I know, but so you know what I realized is like you know I didn't want to, and that's like that's what I see a lot in my life. You know, I have this capacity for great enjoyment. You know, I was with Osho for a long time, that was a big part of that community working through conditionings around sexuality. So I've had amazing, you know, I had amazing, wonderful experiences around that in that area, and at the same time, ego always wanting to prevent me from really having that. And, you know, taking it away from me every time that it actually came my way. So there's this huge, you know, like kind of longing and wanting. And then when I have it, it gets taken away. So
right. Because I would bet, and we have talked before, so, you know, it's a pretty safe bet, where ego couldn't get you as easily with just sex. It could certainly get you with sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
yeah.
So if it can't destroy the one thoroughly enough, it'll just bring in the next element. So now we have relationship,
right.
We have love, we have connection, we have partnership, we have these sorts of things. Those are all ripe areas for self-hate to go after.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. Well, you have the tools to work with her, right?
Yes, yeah. I do. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you for that, Helga.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Helga. Well, one conclusion we can come to, Sherry, is conditioning is awful.
It's awful. And, you know, I just felt so sad for that young girl. and also for all the people around her, because you can't call people names like that from a happy, satisfied, heart-open place, right? Mm-hmm. So we just see I don't know if we're all trapped in that way, but certainly ego has attempted to do the same thing to all of us, however we've responded to it or reacted to it.
Mm-hmm. It's such a source of alienation from a place of fear.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
We can hear you.
Oh, this is Jamie in Delaware.
Hello, Jamie. What are you seeing?
This subject definitely brings up a little bit more anxiety than talking about money or self-care.
Yeah.
I think partly is there's more shame associated with it, or more of a desire to be somewhat secretive about it.
Yeah.
Going back to what, my adolescence, I guess I was told by my male peer group that, sex was something you should pursue and it was a good thing to have. My parents didn't really talk to me about it. But over time, the actual physical part of sex, I don't have much of a problem with, but I had a great deal of difficulty communicating with girls or women that I had any interest in them, or even asking them to have a couple, go anywhere with me or go on a date or all that stuff. So it was, and that continued. I mean, there's probably some of it still today, but that was where I had the difficulty. And I didn't have a lot of actual sexual experience for a number of years, although I did masturbate and have fantasies, but that didn't involve other people. And then there was a period, and I don't know, I didn't really have a lot of shame about it, but I had this constant idea that I should have relationships, not just sexual, but something that had the potential for romance, that I should have that type of a relationship, or just be seen socially with, there was some, my ego on one hand said it's good to have a girlfriend, it's good to go out and be seen by your peer group with girls, but yet I had trouble communicating that, pursuing that verbally, and but it had nothing to do with the physical part of it. But and eventually when I was in my 20s, I actually had a period of time where I had three relationships in about a five-year period. Each of them lasted I was in my early 30s, about 6 months, and there was sexual involvement. In each case, I didn't have problems with the actual sexual act, and I liked the people, and I think that they had some interest in me, but I sort of let them drift away.
So where the conditioning really showed up is in relating.
Yeah, in communicate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Verbal.
And Jamie, I know I'm asking you to speculate about this. Maybe you've looked at it. Does it feel like if there weren't so much emphasis on sex, when we're growing up, when we hit that age where sex becomes an issue, that's, of course, where all the self-consciousness hits as well, right? My teacher used to talk about it as the first chakra is opening, and it's simply an awareness process.
Right.
But it's experienced, because it's experienced in the first chakra, the whole thing turns into sexuality. So there's all that self-consciousness and embarrassment, right, and
right.
Those kinds of things. So does it feel like it's because of that? Before that, were girls okay? Was it okay to have girl friends growing up?
Yeah, and it was all along. It was okay to be around, girls, women, and interact with them. It's just if it got into that area where you, were expressing some interest in them romantically, even or sexual. I mean, it wasn't just that type of thing.
If you found them attractive, if you were attracted
definitely.
To them, then that's when all the self-consciousness and the awkwardness and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Kicks in,
Exactly.
I read somewhere once that when we're little kids and sex is not an issue, then we can just be friends. And when we're really old and sex is not an issue, we can just be friends. But everything in between is just fraught with all of that self-consciousness and awkwardness.
Right.
All right. Well, much to look at, huh?
Oh, yeah. And one other thing is that the whole issue of, masturbation, which I don't do much now, but once in a long while at night after my wife's going to bed, I will turn the computer on and I consciously don't, there's a part of me that says don't do it, but I'll turn on something that's, I guess, pornographic to some extent, and I'll take an interest in that. And then it's like almost like an addiction, but it's not daily. It's like every month or two, and I want to stop that. But then there's that voice. It's like with food or something, where you know you don't want to eat it, but you're in the kitchen, and you go ahead and eat it. And then, when it's over, it's like, oh, I'm back where I started. I have all the issues I had before, and I don't feel real
and
proud
one
about
more.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Plus one more. Well, Jamie, here's my best encouragement. Rather than trying to stop it, which is just simply going to feed ego's desire to control you, to instead bring conscious awareness to it.
Yeah.
Really pay attention. Pay attention to how the voices entice you, how they goad you on, what they promise, at what point do you go unconscious, and then they kind of bring you back to consciousness, and what do they say after that? Do like a process map on the whole thing until you get really clear about what's going on.
Yeah, sort of subtly, I think I tell myself, well, this isn't hurting anybody, but I have a lot of questions about that assumption.
Yes, exactly. That's what you want to find out. You want to make sure that's true, right? You want to make sure that that's true. Yeah.
I have serious doubts about it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I've got a lot to look at. Well,
yes. Yes, we do. Thank you, Jamie.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Go happy.
Jamie.
Bye.
Go happy.
Bye.
No, sir, I'm always struck by the compassion of practice in that encouragement to not stop, but to look and to bring as much awareness to the process. Because it's not that we are going to alter the content, which is where we get stuck in an ego process. It's not that I'm going to stop masturbating. It's simply that I want to look so I can end the suffering around wherever the suffering is coming in.
Yeah.
The ego focuses on the self-improvement or the stopping of the behavior, while practice really, really encourages a process of awareness, because the only thing you really want to let go of is the suffering. And that can only be done by a transformation of consciousness.
Yeah, and that's why Jamie comparing it to that being in the kitchen, and there's that whatever, and it's calling to you, and it is exactly the same process. It's people who have problems with alcohol, with drugs, with whatever. It's the same process of talked into and then beaten up afterwards. So if we can bring conscious awareness to that and save that human being from that,
Yes. Well, and it's what the subject of the exercise is. It's self-hate, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's really what it is. And the mechanism is talk someone into going unconscious, do something that is against the standard of behavior to be beaten up afterwards. That
mm-hmm.
reinforces the inherent message, which is something, there's something wrong with you. You know,
yes.
It's just that over and over and over again. And
yeah.
But only
yeah.
if we're present can we realize it's a program operating and we don't get hooked into it's my fault.
Yes, yes, which is the most important point, which is why this practice begins and ends with there's nothing wrong. Because as long as we're buying into the idea that there's something wrong, we can't look. We can't be open in the way we have to be open in order to move into conscious awareness, conscious compassionate awareness, and save the human being. It's just that's what we're closing in on, right? There isn't anything wrong. So let's look at all of it. Let's face it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
And unwind the process that we weren't able to actually have when we were growing up.
Yes.
You're alive, all this stuff that's going on for you, let's explore it, not repress
yes.
it or say you're bad because you have it or whatever else.
Yeah.
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 All right.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of another powerful show, Sherry, and here's our assignment. The whole suffering process is set up to keep the karma in place. I have to meet certain standards that fix or change me, that make me better the way I should be in order to be acceptable or lovable. Yet meeting those standards doesn't get me the approval or acceptance or love that I've assumed I would receive if I meet the standards. This whole orientation misses the point. What we're being conned into believing is that our inherent goodness is conditional. It assumes that authentic nature is dependent upon performance. So attention is taken away from our authentic nature and turned into an ego-maintaining, dualistic conversation that causes us to believe our acceptance is conditional.
Mm-hmm.
Assignment. Record what is true about you, the internalization of which would enable you not to fall for and be tortured by the self-hate conversation. Listen to and add to this recording as you get clearer about what is true for you. Mm-hmm. Says it all.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Ashwini. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you.